sometimes just changing the headline or just changing the basic way you present it. Most people screw up by thinking that they're selling a package of DVDs with special reports, and they're not.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
Hello, this is James Schranko, and today I'm talking with John Carlton, who is an expert at copywriting. Welcome to the interview, John.
Glad to be here, James.
First off, I think it would be a good idea just to cover a little bit about who is John Carlton, because I'm sure you'd be familiar to anybody who's at an elite level with their marketing business, and I'd like to introduce you for people who may not have already heard of you. Could you give us a little bit of background about your story?
Yeah, real briefly, I got into the business from being a complete slacker up until about the time I was 33 years old, and I had an epiphany that if I was going to get my life together, I needed to do it right away. I had no idea that I was going to get into professional writing, but that appealed to me even back then, because I kept getting fired from every job I'd ever had. I was a miserable employee and just didn't take well to the corporate world. And this was a way to work within the corporate world kind of from the sidelines and make more money than I would working inside the corporate world. And there weren't a lot of freelance copywriters out there. It was a gig that was very little understood, and there were very few people out there and no one teaching others how to do it. I just happened to be in Los Angeles during the early 1980s at a time when some very famous guys, first Jay Abraham, then Gary Halbert, and a lot of other people who I was able to meet through a series of stalking them and just hanging around, making a nuisance of myself and working for free for Jay for a while. And I just got hooked in, and because I was so hungry, and I had studied so hard and read all of the right things, I kept moving forward very, very rapidly. I became what's called an A-list writer for the largest direct mail organizations in the country. Started ghostwriting for a lot of people, including names like Jay Abraham and Gary Halbert. I partnered up with Gary Halbert. We started producing some of the early seminars that became the marketing seminars that are out there now. I produced some of the wrote and produced some of the first infomercials out there. And when the web came around, we noticed it right away and thought it was going to be just as good as it became. I wrote one of the first web ads. It was very primitive back in the early 90s, and I didn't really get into it heavily until about 2001. After 25 years of being a top writer, working with a lot of the legends and having my name associated with a lot of the top marketers out there, I decided to come out as a guru, so to speak, or a teacher. And since then, I've been concentrating more and more on teaching people how to write, and especially how to write themselves. And my joy is in working with entrepreneurs and working with small business people as opposed to the large corporations. That was one of the good things about meeting Gary Halbert, if your list does know about that name. I turned my back on literally millions of dollars working with these big corporations where they were mailing a lot, they were going to large numbers of names, and I just knew that I would have more fun and eventually make more money if I went with Gary off into the muck of the entrepreneurial world and the small business world, and that is where my true love lies. Not with the big corporations. I like dealing with the guys who own the business, who can write the check, who can make the decisions, who don't need an army of lawyers to look everything over, and things move a lot faster, and it's a lot more fun doing that. So.
Excellent. So, it sounds like from your use of the word stalking that you had a particular passion for this. You know, you had a real desire to learn about copywriting.
Yeah, of course. I'm only half joking with the stalking. What happened was that every time being in Los Angeles at that time, it's not so much like that now. It was just one of those magical times where everybody seemed to be in one spot at one time. Jay Abraham was just a few miles from where I lived. I didn't know he existed. I met him by accident. Through him, I met a man named John Finn, who became my agent for a while, who introduced me to a number of other writers who lived in Orange County, very nearby, just a number of people I met Gary Halbert at Jay Abraham's divorce party. We hit it off immediately, even though he was an arrogant bastard. I just knew that we were going to get along. And all of this stuff was just happening. Most of the books that people read now and refer to, like Claude Hopkins, books by John Cables and Robert Collier, those books were out of print. And I like to tell a story. Gary Halbert paid $1,000 for a mimeograph of a John Collier book back then because it was out of print. You couldn't find it. So that's how valuable this torn up, dog-eared mimeograph was. That's an old word for a Xerox copy. They don't even have mimeographs anymore. But I started out on a manual typewriter with a sticky F key. And moved my way up to an IBM Selectric with one line of memorized type, and then got one of the first computers. It was built. It was just a couple of IBM drives with a 5 1/4 inch floppy. So I got involved very early. I worked in Silicon Valley for a while, but I was always working on the underground side of it. Always, again, interested with the entrepreneurs and the small business guys, the real movers and shakers.
You mentioned about the having to do it. I guess you'd call it the old school way,
right?
And there's a lot of programs out there that, punch in a few bits and pieces and you can generate a super-duper sales letter. Do you look on those sort of things with disdain, or, you know, what's your comparison between old school and the new way that some people are generating sales letters?
You know, almost about 2000, 2001, when the some of the programmers started getting hip to marketing, they started coming out with these software programs to write copy. And what it was a very simple way to try to break down what is seen as the creative process of writing, which really isn't, but it's seen to make it codified in a software program. Of course, they ran into the same problems that the people in artificial intelligence ran into, which is that there's, even though it's simple to a human mind, it's much too complex to break down into any kind of software. So you can buy all the, automatically write a letter and things, but they're pretty silly. And it's the same with writing. They have programs to write a novel, automatically with software. It's just, I mean, that's fine if that's what you want to do, but a lot of this is all about trying to avoid the simplest way of getting to the result you want. It's almost like the diet industry. Everyone wants a magical pill that you take, go to sleep, and wake up 20 pounds thinner. That's fine, and that's what keeps the diet industry rocking. The truth is, if you really want to lose weight, you got to eat a little less, you got to exercise, you have to lead a more healthy lifestyle. And as much as you want to fight that and get around it and look for magical ways, that's what you got to do. You can have your stomach stapled and you'll still find a way to get fat if you refuse to understand that you have to, you have to stop eating so much, you got to exercise. It's the same with writing copy. It's not that hard to write your own stuff. Once I take people who are fearful, skeptical, stubborn, I drag them kicking and screaming into this world where suddenly, out of nowhere, they're able to look at a blank page or now a blank monitor, and actually, since I show them what to do, they no longer are fearful of that first step. So once they start doing it, they fall in love with it. Tillman Knudsen, of course, is one of my famous students. His name should be familiar to people, the list building king. Hated to write, and everyone on his staff hated to write. And he challenged me to try to get him to fix a site of his using my simple writing system, the 17 steps. And, with 10 minutes of working with him, I was able to double response on that. But the more beautiful part of this was that Tillman, after listening to me go through this and realizing how easy it really was, he is now starting to write. And this is a guy with ADD, and he's a lovable guy, but he's all over the place. He is now finding how easy it is to sit down, and knowing what the first few steps are, actually write his own stuff. This is a huge breakthrough for him. And for people, for everyone else, if you keep thinking you want that magical secret or the voodoo that will have it all done for you, that's fine. That's how I stayed rich as a freelance copywriter. People who were perfectly capable of writing their own stuff, who knew their product much better than I would ever know it in a 100 years, who were in a position to be able to sell it face-to-face, who really understood all of the nuances and knew everything, paid me up to $30,000 to write it for them. And no matter how much I could try to talk them into writing it themselves, they refused to do that, so I would take their money, write it, and be done with it. And they knew, and since they didn't bother to understand what went into a simple piece of copy, the elements that make it work, which are basically salesmanship, basically the same things that they are using to sell people face to face, I'm just putting it in writing or in a video or an email or on a web page, and it really is that simple. I can take, I have a saying, I would rather take a illiterate streetwise salesman and turn him into a copywriter. I can do that faster than I could take a guy with a PhD in English literature and try to turn him into a salesman. Because the key is knowing how to sell. Once you know how to do that, the writing part is really easy.
So I've heard people say that copywriting is salesmanship in print. Would that
yes.
be your definition?
Sure. I was talking with Brad about that just the other day. There's some question as to who actually said that first, but that was said back about the turn of the last century, so around 1900. I think it might have been Kennedy. I thought it was Claude Hopkins. But basically, it was the idea that you take the elements of salesmanship and just put it on the printed page. So we're talking about those ads you've seen for hair tonic and things like that. You know, a lot of that was just what the guys were doing anyway. You know, one of the tactics, the shorthand tactics that I teach people, James, is to, if they are able to sell the product face to face to somebody, then record that. Record yourself at what we call fever pitch, talking to somebody. It could be on the phone, could be face to face. Record 5 or 6 of these. You don't even need permission from the person because you're not going to use that recording. And you only need to record yourself, really, but if you can record both sides, then that'd be fine. Then take that, have it transcribed. And if the other person is asking questions, and that can just be, you can just have those introduce those questions. So have it transcribed, fix it up just a little tiny bit, take out the ums and the ahs, and kind of fix it up so that's in sentences. And whenever the other person had a question, just put in, but how much is this, you know, or how would I use this, you know, with a different, you know, in a different format. And how you answer that would be how to do that. And you're going to come up with a killer sales letter just doing that way. So that's why we talk about salesmanship in print. It really is the same things you use to sell face-to-face.
So it's almost like a sales conversation in print.
Well, that's what I say. Of course, copywriting drives people nuts. Here at this seminar in Melbourne, I had one person listen to my entire talk, come up to me later, and think I was talking about copyright, the legal patenting of a piece of intellectual property, the copyright. And, of course, I'm not. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not doing that. He totally missed the boat on everything. But that's not an uncommon question. Copywriting, 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 that still confuses people. So a few years ago, after talking with John Reese, I kind of had a brainstorm where I actually dropped the word copy and just started talking about writing, just started, you know, the idea of writing. I still run into a lot of resistance on that, a lot of, I can't do that, you know, I don't know how to write, or I don't want to, or, it's going to be hard, you know. So I even dropped that and brought it down to the idea, now I talk about the sales conversation that you get onto the written page, and that seems to be hitting home with people. Now they're starting to understand exactly how simple and straightforward this is.
Sounds like you've used one of the techniques that you talk about and putting yourself in the customer's shoes and then looking at it from the position that they might see what it is that you do.
Two books you need to read. One is, have you recommended Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich to your people before?
Well, I think it's generally recommended by most business people, but I'm fascinated to know what books you recommend.
Well, there's two. One is Think and Grow Rich, and that had a particular resonance for me because when I was 33 years old and a wanker, just absolutely nothing going for me. I was literally living in my car. I was homeless for 6 months. I lost my job, my girlfriend, my place to live, all within a 2-month period. And I was destitute, looking up friends and sleeping on their couches and just being about as low as you can go. And Think and Grow Rich literally fell into my lap one day. And I read it. And not to go too deeply in the book, but it talks about goal setting. And there's a simple process to goals. I think you talk about it in your talk. It's decide what you want, plan to go get it, and then go get it.
Yep.
Now, that sounds pretty simple, but for me, the first step, you know, want something. I didn't know I could want something. It was a big leap of faith for me to say, wait a minute, I can actually want a better life. This sounds silly now to me, or it's humorous, but I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know you could actually want something beyond what you're already doing. So the planning and the going after was actually very easy. The hard part for me was deciding, you know, that I would want something, that I could actually, then I had to decide, well, who am I? What do I want? Do I want $1 million? And I actually kept a lot of those first lists I did, those first goal-setting lists, and they were ridiculous. And I remember thinking, this is very interesting, I found a banker's box that was about 20 years old in the garage the other day, and I found my old list. And I remember thinking those goals that I set down early on were way too out there, and I was never going to reach them, and I needed to forget about it. But I've been looking at them every day, like Napoleon Hill talks about, trying to do the plan, doing all this stuff. And I realized every single one had come true over the 20 years, even though I decided that my first lists were way too beyond me. It was like $100,000 a year. It was like, you know, own a home. It was like, you know, get a new car, find the love of my life. All of that I've done. And so they became unconscious. So even, you know, consciously deciding that it wasn't going to work, I made it, you know, it worked anyway. So that's the first thing you look at. Everything I teach in copywriting and in business and in the whole salesmanship thing is to take things and break them down to their simple elements. I kept doing this because I built it up the other way. I had to learn it from the simple part, build it up, and become more and more of an A-list writer. And I had checklists all the time. And these checklists that I used to use to make sure I wasn't skipping anything when I was doing it back when I was a rookie, turns out that's the whole subject matter of my simple writing system that has been such a big hit. It's because I just take these people through these 17 steps, and it's like magically they not only write their first stuff, but they know how to write, they know what goes into it, and they figure it out. So the first book was Think and Grow Rich, which helped me break down the idea of wanting something and going after it. The second one is what's called The Salesman's Bible, which is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. It's been frowned upon. They actually did a re-edit of it in the 90s, and I don't recommend you get that. Get your hands on an old, dusty, beat-up copy from the 30s or the 40s or the 50s. And forget about the stilted language and all that. Just read it, because the basic elements of that is where the magic comes from. And every salesman who knows what he's doing out there has read this book. All this other stuff by Cialdini and all these guys, these persuasion books, they all go back, whether they give it credit or not, they go back to what Dale Carnegie was talking about. And he didn't make it up. He was doing what salesmen have been doing since the beginning of language, you know, which is being, you know, gain trust, build a relationship, bond, do all this as quickly as possible. And then through that bonding and the credibility, establish an offer that makes sense in their head. So you had brought up walk a mile in another man's shoes. That's one of the basic things. It seems obvious to people who live their lives this way. To people who haven't encountered it, it's a revelation. Don't try to sell what you have to the other person. Let the other person buy what you have. Let the other person decide that, yes, that's right, that is what I want, and yes, you are the person I want to deal with. You can't force that on anybody. They have to decide it themselves. So if you don't understand what's going on in his head, where he's hurting, where his problems are, what keeps him up at night, if you don't understand any of this, you're going to be speaking into the ether, and nothing's going to happen. Nothing good is going to happen. However, if you understand this guy, the deeper you understand him, what his life is like, how much he's hurting, what exactly he's hurting about, and really the pain about that. If you haven't experienced those things, you know, rich people who have been rich all their lives can't sell how to make money to people who are broke or don't, because they don't understand what it's like to be broke. Almost all the people who are wealthy, who talk about their wealth and stuff, are nouveau rich. They're the people who made money, who brought themselves up. The other ones just take it for granted. So
that's really interesting about people should be wanting to buy from you rather than you selling to them. What do you think about manipulative techniques? Sometimes you come to sites and you see like countdown timers and, you know, scarcity principles, or, you know, there's X number of things left. Do you use those sort of devices?
Well, one of the most popular chapters, and I talk about this when I give a speech, and I'm very careful to talk about this, but one of the more popular chapters in my book, Kick-Ass Copywriting: The Secrets of a Marketing Rebel, is the chapter about how old-time scamsters used to use their wiles. And the reason I talk about this is because if you want to know how to sell, you have to look at the guys who used to come into town to sell snake oil. And they had like one day to sell, because they had to leave town the next day. If they stuck around, they'd be hung or tarred and feathered. So I'm not saying you should sell scams. What I'm saying is that selling is selling. There are some basic elements to selling, to persuading another person, that where it crosses into, you know, salesmen have a black eye for a reason. Used car salesmen, you know, we joke about them, and you have some experience with that yourself. It's not it's not unfounded, but you can't paint all used car salesmen with the same brush. The reason they have a bad reputation is because, you know, if they know how to sell, they can sell a bad car. And this goes, and once you understand this, when you're a top marketer, some of, if you think that having the best product in the market is going to make you the winner, you are sorely mistaken. There are guys who will sell a product that is 10 times worse than yours, and they'll sell more of it because they know how to sell. The marketing graveyard is crammed with great products that nobody figured out how to sell. And the mansions of the wealthy and famous are filled with people who have sold the crappiest stuff ever made. So get over your bad self about thinking, I'm not going to learn anything that anybody's used to do unethical stuff because I'm going to not sell. I'm not actually going to sell. I'm just going to, you know, make an offer. And because I have a great product, it's going to sell. Not going to work. It's never worked since the dawn of time, and it's not going to work now. And the reason we use things like scarcity and countdown timers, one is that it's kind of fun. But what you're doing is it's basically easy to get somebody what I call up on the fence. And I'm not sure if that's a term that you guys use here. But what that means is that they'll say, wow, James, that's a pretty good product. I like you. I like what you have. And you know what? Someday maybe I think I'm going to come back here and probably buy.
Yeah.
It's easy to get them to that point. What separates the people who fail from the people who become very, very wealthy is knowing how to knock them off the fence so that they, you know, they'll say, that's really something I want. I think I kind of want that. Let me think about it. And you say, well, okay, you can't think about it. However, and then you bring in things like scarcity and limitation, things like this. Now, you shouldn't make this up, but you don't have to make this up. The unscrupulous people will make this up. They'll just say, there's only 100 copies, which online is silly, you know, because we know there's more than that. But they'll use other things, and that's where the launch process comes, is the fact that, yes, we will open the doors on Monday. Yes, we will close the doors on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. That's a natural thing. We're doing this because that's what we're doing. You know, we don't, and a lot of times you don't even have to give an answer. You know, why don't you just keep it open forever? Well, we're just not going to. We're doing this because we're going to get started, like, on Friday, so we're going to cut off enrollment. It's kind of like how school or jobs start. You know, it's a school starts, you know, Monday at 9 a.m. Now you can show up Thursday at noon if you want, but they're not going to go back and pick up from Monday for you. You're going to miss all that. So life is full of deadlines and limitations for a reason. By the way, deadlines are one of the best inventions ever invented. If you don't have deadlines in your own personal life, you're not going to get anything done ever. So it's kind of like the human mind wants to slack off. The human mind is lazy and doesn't want to do anything, even the most simple things, no matter how good it's going to be for you, you don't want to do it. That's why, you know, you set dates for weddings and things like that is coming up. You know, it's not, yeah, let's get married sometime. No, let's get married in August 8th. So it's the same type of thing. So those things, and as far as the countdown timers and stuff, there is an element of fun in there, in that it builds up what we call theater. And you know from your car days, the presentation or the theatricalness of this just gives people a sense that this is real, that this is kind of fun, it's kind of real, there's some personality there, there's some, just basically theater drama going on. You know, one of the biggest things that sells is controversy, for example. You know, you can have a great product presented boringly, will not get read, will not get acted upon, will not even catch anybody's notice. You get a little controversy in there, two marketers going at it, saying, no, that's not true and that's not true. Now, some marketers have even invented that at times, but if it's real, whether it's invented, whatever you're doing, you do things to just kind of stir things up. Look at the shows that survive on television, again, shows that die an untimely death very soon. It's usually a matter of that, how much theater is going on and how much isn't. Engrossing the people, making sure that they're interested, bringing them into the story, making them invested in it. And selling is the same thing. It's all about investing people in your story.
Well, we used to talk about people having experience. So I guess you can do that on a sales letter as well.
An experience.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And in fact, that's what you can do that. We used to do that in direct mail. You know, it's like you would get a letter and open the letter, and what fell out of the envelope could be part of that experience. It was like, whoa, there's this and there's that and there's the other thing. And it all grabs you, and it's not boring at all. It's not like, oh my God, how am I, you know, if I, you know, it's most people when they do open a bad letter, they would just toss it immediately, go straight in the trash. But if you had one or two words in there, in the envelope, that grab them, and then to the point that they didn't say, oh, I'll read this later, so I'll keep it. No, it's they're going to read it now. So they're standing. All of a sudden, they realize they've been standing at their doorway, sorting through their mails for 10 minutes, reading your letter going on, and they're moving towards the phone to actually order. You can do that same thing online. You can do it in video. You can do it in email. It's all about telling a riveting story that stays inside of the prospect's head.
I heard someone mention that people open their letters while they're standing over the bin.
That was Gary Halbert, and that's the famous A Pile, B Pile speech, which, by the way, translates very well to the web. And the old A Pile, B Pile was people sort their mail into A Piles and B Piles. The A thing is letters from friends, bills, and things they know they need to get to. It's pile A. Pile B is everything else, and it goes straight into the trash bin.
So I guess we're sort of heading towards the fact that a website probably should have a headline or something to get attention when people come to it. Would there be things that if you could only choose one or two elements to have on in your copywriting, and you know, if you could only have a couple, what would they be?
Well, it kind of depends on the product, but of all of the things that you have to choose, you have to realize that what you choose can be, and I know you're a big fan of testing, so you could test, find out what they need to know. So for a lot of things, and I'm pulling this out of thin air, but I am constantly urging people to put their photos in there with some kind of identifying matter. You know, so if you could do without the headline, if you had a photo of James, and then like an introductory thing that leads them in, that exercise that I've been taking people through in Sydney and Melbourne. Hi, my name is James. I do this for this group of people, you know, even though they have these kind of problems and these are the kind of results we get. You can do all that in one sentence, really. So if you get that whole kind of what we call the USP, the unique selling position, so position yourself, you can do that. You can get it very, very tight and small. Now, people usually have questions like, well, what do you mean by this? Or what exactly is involved in this? And if the price is high, you're going to have to do more. I liken the amount of copy that you use, or the amount of writing that you do to dating or to romance. Think about selling a small product, like a $9 product, to somebody who already knows you, to like getting a number of someone or asking for a first date, all the way up to if you're asking for $1,000 or $3,000, it really is like asking them to marry you. So think about the process that has to happen to do that. To get somebody to give you their number, you really have to be kind of presentable. Just, you know, you talk a little bit. It could be one sentence, in fact, or two sentences. But if you're asking for a lot more money, you're asking for a lot more investment, there's a long conversation that goes on there. So that conversation, you know, you want to build it up. You're going to have to answer a lot more questions because you're asking people to make a bigger investment. So they're going to want to know more, and you're going to have to tell more to them and explain more. Right. So that's a cute little way of thinking. It's like, well, I'm selling a $199 product, which is actually technically a high ticket item. Low ticket would be like $19 to $49. So if you get into the higher ticket items, people are not going to just give it to you. Even if you have a great guarantee, you have to give them a reason to buy. And that reason may need a little bit of explaining to you. Thus, we get into the whole long copy thing.
Right. So this is a reason why technique. And I was going to ask you about short and long copy because pretty much I've been hanging around you for the last week or so, and I think we've been asked this question over and over and over again. You know, some people even said, I recall a gentleman said that he doesn't like long copy, and why can't people not use silly price numbers and just have a nice short, simple, short letter just to say, this is what I've got, buy it now.
Right.
And you reacted fairly passionately to that question.
That was insane. That was pretty funny. You know, what people want, I mean, what's interesting is I don't know if you were around, but what I get a lot when I speak, and I don't speak that often when I speak, people like me, and they like me because I'm honest. I'm brutally honest. And they often say, you're the only honest guy up there. You're the only guy that really told it like it is. Well, I'm not, you know, I'm honest. The other guys, you're honest. The other guys are honest. There's just this sense of how you present yourself and what you say and what you reveal. And I'm just very open. I don't hold anything back, and I lay it all out there. And what these people want is they want the world to be different. So one of the best shortcuts to becoming a salesman, and by the way, salesman Good salesmen lead better lives than everyone else. They get to marry the people that they choose. They get to do what they want. They make more money. Everything good happens after you learn how to sell. One of the best ways to, see, I almost lost my train of thought there, to become a sales, is to look at the world as it really is, to become a realist. Most people live their lives wishing the world was like it should be, they think it should be, or that they wish it was. They want the world to be like they think it should be or the way they wish it was. And that's how they live their lives. And one of the first things I like to do is knock that nonsense out of their head. Just look at the world the way it is. Now, this shocks some people. It shocks a lot of people. It is a shocking thing to go through. Here's the thing that most people don't realize. They think that once they see the world as it, quote, really is, unquote, it's going to be nasty and brutish and short, and they're going to hate it, and they won't love people or anything. It's just the opposite. Life becomes more vibrant. Love becomes deeper. Everything becomes more real, and you're not walking around in a daze or a living dream, you know, thinking about things. Most people live in a daydream. They're zombies. I don't call people sheep. You know, a lot of people say they're sheep and they need to be led. I don't believe that, but I do believe that people walk around in a zombie state, the majority of people out there. And the best thing you can do for them is to wake them up and let them know that this is real, this is what's happening. You can't do that with the tactics by letting them make up their own mind, because their mind is clouded by this kind of semi-conscious zombie state. That thus we use the tactics of salesmanship, which is a long conversation. And when I say long, the only reason we use long copy is that we start talking or writing or talking on a video or doing whatever we're doing. We start talking by introducing ourselves, establishing some credibility and believability, supporting that with maybe some testimonials, so kind of giving some third-party endorsement, giving some rational reasons to get involved, letting people know what we've got, letting people know how it's going to affect them, and then kind of explaining here's what you've got to do now, and here's how to do it, and here's what's going to happen after you get it. And after you're through covering these essential, simple points, and I have a 17-point checklist that you go through in the Simple Writing Center. Very simple. You go through all those. You're going to have a longer letter, but it's the same as a conversation. Imagine the conversation. You can't talk someone into going steady with you in a short conversation. The conversation includes all the talking you've had before up to that point, which is probably months and months and months of talking. You can't sell a car to someone who just walks on the lot and say, well, you need this Chevy, here it is, here's the price, and that's it, you're done. Doesn't work that way. There is a process that people have to go through. So a lot of people do want the copy to be short. They actually want the copy not to exist at all. They just want to be able to say, here I am, I've got this product, line up over here. And it just, I mean, it's a rude awakening to discover that it doesn't happen that way, but that's the way it is. And once you realize that, and once you realize at the same time that learning how to sell, and learning how to sell in print or on video or using email or on websites is really simple once you've got it down, life becomes a greased chute or slide, as we say. And you can just, the world falls before you.
So you're doing a bit of coaching now of other copywriters. I think you're one of the right people that actually stepped out and said, well, I might as well get out there and teach people how to do this properly, because you were getting ripped off a lot from what I gather.
Yeah, they would rip off my ass.
And so you decided to give them a proper education. What sort of challenges come up over and over again from people who you start to train? I imagine there's a set of standard sort of challenges that occur.
There are two types of people who self-select to become copywriters. One is people who are seduced by the lifestyle, and it's a great lifestyle. There's no better lifestyle in the world. You work at home, you work your own hours, you're your own boss. You know, clients come to you, they beg you to work for them, they pay you unconscionably amounts of money. So it is a great lifestyle. So some people are attracted to that. It's almost like a business opportunity. Others are writers who are astonished that they can actually get paid for doing something they already like to do. But they're writing in their journals, or they wrote for the high school newspaper, or they're just good writers. They easily write emails to their friends. They communicate. Their Facebook pages are glowing, and people compliment them on stuff. But they don't know how to turn dime one on this kind of stuff. And then, of course, there's the third category, which is people who have been in marketing or advertising in some way and realize that the missing link is great copy. Again, whether it's a video script or whether it's a web page or a sales page or a sales letter or even a brochure or even a script of what to say on the phone or in person, somebody has to write that out. Somebody has to figure out these are the things we want to say. This is how we're going to establish trust. This is how we're going to move through all these points. And what's even businessmen, we had one guy in the recently in the Simple Writing System. His name is Otto Tromm. He was in he's from Belgium. He had a very, very good business, but he wasn't able to sell stuff very well online. He just kept having to bring them offline and go through all these phone calls. It was a long process, and he'd sell these things that sold for like $20,000 each. It was an audio system kind of thing. And he took the course, and within a week, before he's even finished, he wrote one email to a guy that sold a $20,000 piece of equipment, and he realized this is easy. I've been doing this wrong all along. And what happened as a result of that, and this was a guy who couldn't write his way out of a paper bag before, what happened as a result of that, his friends who were marketers, his friends who owned businesses, came to him, flooded to him and said, you know how to do this? You know the magic of getting this down to writing this stuff? So they started asking him, so now he's going to leave this very lucrative business, just sell it, and become a freelance copywriter. Because he knows the secrets. He now knows what to do. So you asked about the common problems. If you're getting into it for the lifestyle to become a copywriter, that's not a good reason to do anything. That's, you may not like it. It's not so magical that you're not going to have to work or not going to have to love it and have to get into it. But those who do find that they love it, those who do get into it and find that even if this isn't completely easy, it is easier than I ever believed. It is merely a matter of sitting down and understanding the process and just kind of figuring it out. It's almost like playing Clue or being a detective. I call it being a sales detective. It's the first step of being a good copywriter. You have to figure out what are the elements that are going to go into this. Who's it going to? What needs and problems does it address? How do they see it? What's the gossip and rumors about this product or this service out there? And all these other things go into that. That's all just for the letter. That's all stuff that you could put into that. It's all ammo for you. And after that, it's just really easy. All this other, you just lay it out. Here's the story of this thing. You know how it was invented? It was invented in, Antarctica by a blind sociopath who was sent there, because it was a penal colony, something like that. And, it's all about telling the story. So if you're a storyteller and you'd like to make money by telling stories and you enjoy selling and you enjoy everyone has to sell. If you're married, you sold yourself to your spouse. If you've ever had anything good to happen to you, if you got a job you didn't think you were going to get, you sold yourself at some point. However, most people's inner salesman is dead fast asleep. But if you wake that guy up and you get over your ideas that selling is somehow bad or it's, people don't want to be sold, but they don't want to be sold stuff they don't want. When you have something they want, they very much want to be sold. That's the engine of capitalism. That's how our society works. I let you know I have something that directly solves the problem you're having. If I didn't do that, then shame on me for not using every tool in my at my disposal to make you realize that I have this, make you realize that I'm the guy you should be dealing with, make you realize that you should get in on this right now because it's a screaming deal that with total risk reversal, a total guarantee, you're not risking anything. And just all of those elements so that you need to act right now. You need to get in on this because it's going to solve your problem. It's going to fix the things that are going wrong. It's going to get you unstuck. If you need money, it's going to give you money. If you need help in anything, it's going to give you help. It's going to do the things you need. Then that's, if I didn't advertise, if I didn't make my case, if I didn't do the little theater and go through all the salesmanship I need to go through to make you realize that, you could look at my product and just skip right by it and go on your unmerry way because you're in pain and whatever and never know that product would have changed your life.
So people who are blogging or submitting articles to directories or sending off emails or even probably using Twitter could learn copywriting skills and enhance their message dramatically.
I use it in my Twitter account all the time. You've been following. If you look at my old tweets, I will typically tweet four or five times late at night. I'll just do it. But, I always try to weave stories. Sometimes I'll weave it a story so that each of the five tweets are another little mini chapter. At 140 characters, you can't do a lot. But you can actually, by using words, by knowing how to tell a story, one of the first things that happens when you learn how to tell a story, your stories get shorter. They get tight. They get concise. They get riveting. and you can do little cliffhangers and do little tangents and stuff. The worst thing is to be a storyteller that bores people. I grew up, I was 8 years younger than my sister, 10 years younger than my brother, essentially an afterthought in the family. And I remember, and I live in a family of storytellers. And I remember being the kid, nobody wanted to hear what Johnny did in kindergarten in the sandbox. You know, I learned very young that if I didn't get a hook in there, if I didn't start the story with the punchline and get it in there, I wasn't going to be able to tell my story, and I was just going to be the silent one at the table. So that kind of competition made me think about it, storytelling. Every one of my cousin, one of my best friends in life is my cousin Donald. He's a storyteller, and I realize how lucky I was to grow up, but storytelling is the lifeblood of the human social experience. Before writing, that's how our histories were all told story, you know, story by story. Read the old Brothers Grimm, Aesop's Fables, all of those old stories that have become all the Disney cartoons, you know, Cinderella, the Seven Dwarfs, is that the same one? Snow White or something. Eva, those stories, they're all iconic. You can actually take those stories and replace the story of your life into those. Find out what the elements are. What was Snow White? She is the iconic element of who the reader identifies with. Even males identify with it. The misunderstood, put upon person who's out of place and being unfairly maligned and reaches, and the Seven Dwarfs are actually an iconic figure for the essentially, you know, goal setting. The whole idea that there are ways to want something, to be able to get centered on it, and to go after it, and it's, you know, you can go on and on with the psychological values of that. But good storytelling is just very crisp and gets along. The original Snow White tales actually is very, very short. People think about the Disney movie, which is, I believe, 86 or 90 minutes, but the original story is very, very short.
Sounds like Star Wars with good and evil, you know, the white and the black. That's a simple overlay.
You know, that kind of stuff, you know, that Star Wars is all based on Carl Jung's Man and His Symbols. Did you know that?
No, but I do now.
Well, Carl Jung wrote a book called, Carl Jung was a contemporary of Freud, but he went another way. He went, whereas Freud was much more into this stuff, Carl Jung was much more into the iconic elements, and as he traveled the world, he found so many elements, literally symbols carved into rocks that were common all the way across the world, where these people could have never been in contact with each other. So he came up with the idea of the collective unconscious, which is kind of science fiction in reality, where we all share these basic elements, and all the stories and all the myths and all the religions of the world are based on the same basic elements of good versus evil, of the conflict of the good man facing the dark side and all this stuff. And that's how he wrote Star Wars. He did it based on Man and His Symbols.
So you weave those into other products, and it helps that story get perpetuated.
You know, the more you know about storytelling, the better off you're going to be. You know, I've got guys I brought in who were stand-up comedians who told stories as part of their stand-up act. And I'm interested in people who do improv. I'm interested in people who write short stories and even novels, how you craft a story. You can always be learning about this. But some of the best ways to do it is to just know, kind of figure out how to tell a story yourself. I put people through the paces to kind of get their story chops. We all have them. They're all rusty now because we've been watching TV too long and letting other people tell our stories. But you have a story. Most people tell the story. It's probably boring. It's too long. Start trimming it. Start thinking about what was interesting, what's not, and start telling people. And when you're paying attention to your audience, which is what, say, a stand-up comic has to do, then you don't tell the parts the next time that didn't get a laugh or that got people bored. And if you start realizing as you're doing after, it's very quickly, you start to say, I actually have a thing I run through, all copy through in my head, which is called the so what question. If at any time my imagined reader, who I'm thinking about, could say, so what, then that goes out, because I'll lose him at that point. So I keep it riveting so that he doesn't say, well, why are you telling me this, so what? I want him going, wow, and then what? Wow, and then what? Wow, and then what?
Fantastic. When you enhance a story and you improve the copy, I'm really interested in the traffic side of things. A lot of people talk about traffic online, and I don't think many people realize that small changes in conversions is quite often the equivalent to getting double the traffic.
Exactly.
I'd love to know some sort of metrics or stats, like, you know, what sort of conversion percentages to average sales pages make, and you know, I'm interested about things like squeeze pages and how you measure that sort of stuff. What are some good metrics to know about there? And what sort of examples of profound changes have you seen with changing the copy of the before and after?
Most of my testimonials that I get involve doubling, tripling, and quadrupling conversion and thus sales. Happens both at the opt-in page and at the moment of truth, which is the actual sale. Sometimes just changing the headline or just changing the basic way you present it. Most people screw up by thinking that they're selling a package of DVDs with special reports, and they're not. That's just the vehicle for what they're selling. What they're really selling is either like a life change or a solution to a problem or, you know, some very more specific stuff. So if you just turn that around, I just did that with several people in the event here. They took me aside and they said, can you look at my letter? Every single case, what they think they're selling has no earthly connection with what the person who's going to buy it would actually want. They're telling their story from their perspective. You got to tell the story from the perspective of the person who's going to be listening to it and understand it. When you do that, you can generally, and again, I'm operating from the testimonials I get. We just had a gentleman that we filmed downstairs who went from $2,000 a month to $25,000 a month, which is that's a huge jump.
More than 10 times. 1,000% more.
And I don't know how common that is. The numbers, I think Armin was giving the numbers, between 1 and 3% is common for cold lists. But that's for a fairly good offer with some good copy. To house lists, it can vary wildly. It depends what you're doing. And again, it depends how much you nurture the list. We have a very small list at Marketing Rebel. We outperform lists 10 times our size because we don't do anything to keep the people that aren't really going to buy. So our list is smaller, but it's buyers, and it's people who really want to hear what I have to say. And when I say do this, they often will say, okay, I'll give it a shot. So we always wind up in the top 20 or top 15 affiliates. Even though we're a fraction of the size of some of the other people. So the size of the list does not really matter. But metrics is very important, but metrics to me as the writer is secondary. I always think about, in fact, I've talked to a lot of people who think about success or not in terms of conversion rates and things like that. And I stop them sometimes and I say, what's the actual money you're getting? Because I'll get people, I'm getting a 10% conversion on my blah, blah, blah. Really, how much money is that in the bank? Oh, well, I've made $1,000 this month. Well, then it doesn't really matter that you're doing, you know, there's a problem somewhere in this whole thing. So it's not the numbers. You can delude yourself into thinking that the numbers are a result. They aren't. It all comes down to money in the bank. If you have the right price product, you can make one sale out of 10,000 if you're selling a yacht, and that's going to make your year. So there's a whole lot of factors going into that. Don't get seduced by the idea of numbers. This goes back to direct mail, by the way. The average cold list, that targeted cold list, in other words, if you were selling wedding dresses, it was to a list of people who had raised their hands at some point or bought a wedding magazine or had some relationship to weddings. And so it wasn't a totally cold list, like to a phone book list. But to a list like that, as a cold mailing, it was they didn't know who you were, they didn't know what you offered, you were a stranger in the mail. 2% was considered a good response rate. And what's interesting is here we are all these years later online, and we're talking about pretty much the same response rate, bringing in pay-per-click, bringing in names, even though they're more targeted. So I'm not sure how that plays out, but for me, it's less about the metrics than it is about the actual dollars coming in.
So the net profit is always a good metric to worry about.
Absolutely. Well, that's the secondary. First is the gross product. Yep. Make sure you can sell it.
Yep.
And if you can sell it at a loss, you've still sold it, yep, then you start figuring out where the holes were you made it at a loss. But make that sale. Make sure you can sell one before you start.
Yeah, that's true, actually. A lot of my pay-per-click campaigns, they start off a slight negative, and then I'm excited about that because I know with some changes.
Yeah.
And for me, I guess I've been copywriting my PPC ads to get high click-through rates and to get a better relevancy. Should people do their own copy or should they outsource it?
Well, even though I teach people how to be copywriters, again, I think I mentioned earlier, you know, no matter, there's always going to be, businesses starved for writing. They're starved for ads, for video scripts, for web pages. They're starved, literally starving. And of course, if they don't come across me and learn how to do it themselves, and by the way, all the top marketers you know about online write their own stuff. All of them do. Every single one. They don't write all of it. No, the unimportant stuff they have other people do. The important stuff, they write it. Nobody's going to be able to sell your stuff as well as you are once you learn the simple secrets. So the rookies are out there that are doing anything they can to avoid writing, or even the veteran marketers who just say, I'm not a writer. That's a waste of my time. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to outsource it. You're going to pay a lot of money. You're going to pay up to $15,000 to $30,000 to bring a writer in for one project. And if you don't know what needs to go into that, you're as blind as a lamb being led to the slaughter. If it goes wrong, you're not going to know why it went wrong. If it does well, you're not going to know why it did well. And you've learned nothing. You've done nothing. It's like teach a man to fish and give a man a fish. You know, you go buy an ad, you've been given a fish. Good for you. You have a meal. Next time, you're going to be hungry tomorrow. So what are you going to do about that? So I just tell, that's when I stopped. I actually don't take clients anymore. I don't do writing for anybody else, so I'm not really even a copywriter anymore. I write for myself, and I still do it. But I get my joys out of teaching other people how to write, and that's where this all kind of comes home for me. So, you know, the money is about the same, and I'm making a dent in the world and helping people do this. So learn to write it yourself. I had this conversation with 5 or 6 people downstairs at the seminar. They know they should do it. They just can't pull the trigger, and they want to know, how can I get somebody to do this for me? Okay, you can do this. It's going to cost you a lot. And you can spend a fraction of this and spend a little bit of time learning how to do it, and you can do it yourself, and you are free for the rest of your life. You know, the people, the top marketers who know how to write their own stuff, they do not fear going bankrupt. They do not fear having everything taken away from them, either through criminal activity, you know, having this stuff stolen from them, divorce, having half their stuff taken away, having a partner dissolve the business. They do not fear any of this because they know how to start again an hour later by writing, by selling through writing.
And where would you find a copywriter if you were just that busy and you just didn't want to do it?
Well, there's something called Elance out there, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. A lot of rookie copywriters out there actually bid to become the lowest bidder for jobs. So you're going to get the worst of the worst. It's kind of like saying, I need my high-end sports car, which is what your financial life is, a high-end sports car. I need the cheapest mechanic with the least credentials I can find to work on it.
Right.
So you can find writers online. I teach writers how to do what I call a client bait website, which means it's bait, and clients find it online, and then they come in and they go, oh, well, here's a writer, and I'll pay him this, blah, blah, blah. I even have a service. I call it the John Stable of Writers. So if you call my office, we'll hook you up with a writer.
Right.
So, you know, we actually have experienced people. We have people on the speaking circuit who use that. They're just so overwhelmed, even though they could write themselves. They need a writer. They want a guy they can trust. And these writers all have a phone call. They're a phone call away from me. So even though they're not getting me, they're getting the next best thing, a writer who has my ear, my private home phone number, can call me.
So some of the people who take your course, the best ones would come to your attention?
Yes. Excellent. And also the best writers out there. A lot of the copywriters that I've taught to be copywriters are now no longer freelance copywriters. They're now gurus in their own right. I have created my own layers of competition out there, which is fine. But they also, you know, will still work for me, and they gladly, and they teach in my system.
Is your system easy or is it hard? Do you have to have some sort of natural gift to be able to do this?
Yeah, the rookies get the best result. The rookies zoom from, I'll take a guy who's 80% there and grind him through that last 15% to be 95% there, and it'll take about the same time to take a rookie who has never written a single thing in his life, who flunked English, who hates writing, who is skeptical and stubborn and is brought kicking and screaming into this. I'll take him to 95% at the same speed. Because once they get going, once they break through that resistance, then it happens really fast. And in fact, another person, Stacy Morgenstern, I think, from the Last Simple Writing System, which are some classes. We have a mentoring program we offer twice a year, where we actually have professional writers teach small classrooms of people and walk them through. Stacy was clueless, didn't know what was going on, stuck, wasn't making any money with the website. And she had that epiphany very, very early and went on to quadruple the conversion on her site, gave us a very nice testimonial, and then her husband quit his high-paying, high-powered job in San Francisco to come work for her because she was making much more money than he was, and they got to live at home and spend some more time with each other and get out of the rat race. And it happened very, very quickly. And she was as clueless as they come. She fought me at first. And those people, I find, when we get through that resistance, that irrational, unreasonable resistance, which is natural when you're faced with the truth, and it comes, and they just burst out, and they're like the fastest horse on the track.
Awesome. And I'm interested in what you think about video sales letters. Where there's really, I've seen a few products lately, and I'm suspecting that there's probably certain elements someone would need to be able to get away with. Just having a video and an order button. Is this something that's going to be coming in force? Is it something we'll see less of?
There are two sides to this. One, like our friend, our mutual friend Frank Kern, knows how to do this, and this is important, has trained his audience to watch videos and like videos. Other marketers, I won't name them, but they're top marketers, they're people that speak at things like Mass Control and Speak Here, have gone to straight video with no sales letter and very, very quickly went back to a straight sales letter with no video at all. Then there's this big middle ground where people are combining video with sales letters. So it kind of depends a lot on your audience, how much they're able to tolerate the idea of a video. There are problems with videos and I'm not putting videos down, but there are, because we use videos, but there are problems with videos that start with downloading, that start with being able to back up, that start with the information you give them. Are you making them take notes now? It's not written down. You know, one of the things that we learned at Double Sales with our DVDs is to give transcripts. Which is, you know, written stuff. They want to see it, but if they have the transcript, then they don't misunderstand it. They don't have to stop and rewind.
I've seen a lot of people complain about that. You know,
not having
I'm forced to watch this 40-minute video to get the message, or I'd rather just scan a page.
Right. Well, some people, you know, claim. I say claim because I can't verify it personally, but I don't doubt them. Claim very good success. They don't have an order now button until you watch the entire hour video or whatever. Right. But this is all part of a grand plan that they have, and often it's combined with email, which also can become a sales letter. So there is almost always writing going on. And most of those videos that do take the place of a sales letter will have a lot of writing in them. So what it becomes is a different digital form of the written sales letter.
So it would have the sales letter system checkpoints, but contained in the message.
Exactly. And in fact, I've told people, I've given them the secret to to having a good stage presentation speech. I told them it's just a sales letter. Right. Go through the same things you'd go. If you can write a sales letter, you can write a speech that you can present on stage to somebody and take them through the same process. And you can do it in person, you can do it on video, you can do it on an audio, you can do any form of human-to-human interaction, which is all a sales conversation is. One human to another human about something of mutual interest.
You mentioned a term before that I'm familiar with, but perhaps some other people aren't, is risk reversal. I've heard it from Jay Abraham.
Yes, here's one.
I'd love you to give me perhaps some examples, and it probably ties in with guarantees, but are there ones that are more effective than other ones? Like, have you got some advice on that?
One of the best ones, have you read Claude Hopkins, My Life in Advertising and Scientific Advertising?
Yes.
He gives one of the best examples, and I believe he uses the term risk reversal. If he doesn't, it's very close to that.
Okay.
And he talks about the difference between a guy who had a horse, this is back in the 20s,
yeah, yep.
But it's the idea of, here's the horse, you know, look at him, here's the price, if you don't like him, I will give you your money back. Against how this other guy sold the horse by saying, here's the horse, take him home, try him out, it was a workhorse, and if you like him, come back and pay me, you know, 2 days from now. So that
I think he also offers to go around and feed it as well.
Oh, did he? Yeah, okay.
In Jay Abraham's book,
yes.
It's there as well.
So it's the idea of how can, you know, one of the big obstacles or the objections that we talk about in salesmanship, I even say in my speech, you probably heard it when I did the presentation, the best thing you can do for your prospect when he stumbles upon your website is to give him an excuse to leave, because you've just saved him the grief of having to build up the embers of hope in his beaten down heart, and to think that, wow, maybe this is something I do. Maybe James does have something. Maybe I should be getting involved with this. Now you've just changed the direction of his afternoon or his day or his life. Now what he thought was going to go, was happening, is not going to happen anymore. You're taking him out of his comfort zone. You're doing all this stuff. So the best thing you can do, ironically, is to let him go. Is yep. to just give him an excuse, say, this isn't for me, or, you know, who's this James guy, or what nonsense. So the worst thing you can do is to get him involved. So you bring him in, and now he's finally going to say, well, damn it, I'm going to trust James. What else you got? Let's see what's going on. You know, I just may be ready to buy this. You keep coming down. So you start countering those other objections, knowing that this is an inherently hostile relationship. He wants to back out. He wants to find a reason to go think about it. He wants to not do this right now because he's not sure what his wife's going to think. He's not sure what his buddy's going to think. He's got all these problems going on. Knowing that he wants it, so it's his lizard brain against his rational, you know, modern cerebral cortex, and all this battle's going on. So one of the best things you can do, and now I'm not speaking ironically anymore, is you can make him understand that there is no risk. Not just you pay me and you get your money back, but beyond that, what are the actual risks you're worried about? If you don't know who I am, you're worried about that I'm going to take your money and run. So make sure that you cover that. So a lot of times, even online, we will say, you know, hey, look, I'm not hiding. My offices are down at, you know, 123 California Avenue down in Miami Beach, you know, and you can reach me. And this is my number, and here's a picture of my office, and blah, blah, blah. And you can do this to establish that. But you can also say, look, you know, there's all kinds of guarantees out there and all kinds of risk reversals. And it's interesting what will strike. It depends on the market, but some things just strike people as being reasonable or even unreasonably generous. And you want to try to get to that almost unreasonably generous stage. You know, it's double your money back. Or, you know, I will, you know, you can keep the product. Some people have done this with ebooks, by the way, because that brings up a whole different thing. You don't return an ebook. So you're only dealing with a money back guarantee. If you don't like it, you can get your money back. How, as a marketer, how do you actually monitor that? You know, you're going to get ripped off more. A lot of people make that part of the deal. I want you to get your money back, so I dare you to read this. But I will give you twice your money back. I wouldn't do that necessarily with an ebook. But I have had people, clients that I've done. I haven't done it myself. I've done it with clients who really wanted to make a splash and got not just double your money back, but double your money back and keep the product. And we'll still be friends, and you could still come to the seminar and all of this stuff going on. Just invite them to rip you off, because that becomes an unreasonable risk reversal. All the risk is on my shoulders. I'm the one that's risking here. You're not risking anything. I'm the one who's risking this. You know, I'm giving this to you. So that, you know, there's all kinds of examples you can look at that. You have to know what you're doing to do that. I have learned that, for example, just offering money back plus $5 can go a long way toward, you know, $5 out of my pocket.
That's a good tip, and I guess that people can challenge their comfort zone or test it in a safe way.
Yeah, yeah.
You've been very generous so far, so I'm just going to overstep the mark and ask one more thing. There is an element where you sometimes tell people if it's not for them, and you outline.
That's called the takeaway. That's what we were talking about the other night.
Yeah, that was fascinating stuff, because it turns out that I'd included that element in an offer that I made recently, and you pointed that out to me, that you gave me that was a good idea.
Yeah, and you actually using that in the car business too, I imagine, possibly without even knowing it. So it's probably such an integral part of your typical sales soul that it wasn't conscious. But a lot of good salesmanship is about the takeaway, and it can be as blatant as someone saying, you know, this probably isn't for you, and you probably don't want it, so, you know, I don't want to waste your time, and I don't want you to waste my time, so if you're not really interested, then you need to go away now. And that is kind of blatant, because the natural reaction to the stubborn, skeptical, looking for a way out person is to stop and say, wait a minute, you're telling me to go away? The general idea of the takeaway is to present something. A, a, Another way we do it is by qualifying people. And that may have been what you did. I was trying to think of that. Mm-hmm. It's to say, you know, if you qualify, you can be part of this.
Yep.
J. Abraham had a great tactic called there's just one catch. He used to put that in almost all of his letters.
Right.
There's just one catch. You know, is there a catch to this? Yes. There's one catch. And often it would be around the lines of, you have to be serious about this. If you're not serious, it's not going to work, and I don't want to deal with you, and blah, 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 things like that. But sometimes it would be even less. It would be there is one catch to this. You know, I'm only giving out 100 slots to this or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just addressing the issue that the guy in his head is thinking, what's the catch? Where am I going to get screwed on this?
So you put the spotlight on it.
What's going to happen? So you reverse it. You just, you know, and actually reverse it to the point that I have actually had more success in my life by telling clients back when I was a freelancer, by actually telling them, you can't reach me. They would call my assistant and they'd say, I want to reach John, I want to hire him. Well, you can't talk to John. Well, what do you mean you can't talk to John? Well, he doesn't talk to just anybody. He talks to people. You have to be vetted. You have to talk to me first. And they get really mad about this. They get really mad. And we didn't necessarily do it on purpose. I literally couldn't do this, and I knew it was a takeaway, though. It's just you can't do this. You can't hire me. I actually have gone into rooms and said, first of all, let's get this straight. You cannot hire me as a copywriter. However, here I'm going to tell you some things that you can do and blah, 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 and tell them all this stuff. And that's back when we learned that the more you tell, the more you sell. You cannot give what you said. I was being generous. I have found in my career that being generous has never hurt me at all. Because there's always what I'm giving you right now is about 0.1% of what I have to tell people. It's still powerful stuff, but there's just tons of stuff to be able to share. And sometimes the stuff that really clicks with you or that you're able to run off with and use is just a little deeper, one layer deeper than the kind of surface stuff we were talking about here. So the takeaway is, you know, I'll tell you everything I know, but it is only a fraction of what I know because of time constraints. I can't tell you everything. So you already think, well, wait a minute, what else have you got? What aren't you telling me?
Exactly.
What's going on here?
Well, I'm already thinking, you know, I can go away and make significant improvements based on our conversation today. I love that bit of advice you gave someone when they're a little bit of a crisis point just prior to having to punch out a fairly heavy-hitting sales letter. I wonder if you could repeat that one.
What was
where
it?
You just gave the very simple snapshot of what you must do no matter what.
Right. There's a four-part thing that I've given to a lot of people, including people like Frank Kern, who's gone on to write, you know, huge letters. And they were usually when they're just stuck. When you're just absolutely stuck, you don't know what to do. It's very, very simple. Did that just beep off?
No, they're right.
Okay. And that is basically sit down and say, here's who I am, here's what I've got for you, here's what it'll do for you, and here's what you need to do now. So it's very, very brief and simple. You can, you know, if you don't need to have a headline, it's, there's a very, famous template, like from the desk of James Shrampko, and so you don't have a headline, you know,
yeah.
Hi, James here. Here's what I've got for you today. Well, I've got this, this, and this. You know, here's what it's going to do. And if they don't know who you are, you say, hi, I'm James Shrankel. For the last 5 years, I've been a number one leading internet expert and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Here's what I got for you today. Here's what it's going to do for you. And then you go off on that. And then
so
here's
if you
what
cover
you
those things, then that's going to be a great basis for,
great
you know,
basis.
If you have nothing right now, you
that's
can
right.
start with that and
yeah.
you'll be away. If somebody wanted to access your checklists, what course do you recommend?
Well, the checklist, the first book I wrote to kind of give away everything I knew about what to do was called Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets of a Marketing Rebel. And that dog-eared copies of that is on the desk of almost every top marketer. You know, I'm very, very happy with the way that happened. Then we realized that as we were going, we really needed a complimentary course on how to do it. So not so much the what to do, but actually how to do it, the details of how to do it. There's a lot of how-to in the Kick-Ass course. But so what we came up with is I actually went back and I got that 17-point checklist back out of my head that I'd been using to make myself famous and rich and respected in the industry and wrote it all out and spent a year working on it and making it palatable so that an outsider would understand it and it would be able to be something to use. And we call that the simple writing system. And there's two ways to access that. One is there's a home study course, and there's DVDs of me teaching each of the things, taking you through it, giving you exercises, because that's how you learn. It's much better to actually go through the exercise. And for even veteran businessmen, this is the first time any of them have written a real bullet, have written a real USP, have really thought about who they're selling to and what they have to sell. So a lot of people know the buzzwords, but they have never actually applied them and they don't know what to do. So this is how to do it, how to write your USP, how to write a bullet, how to write a good testimonial, how to start the close, how to take them through the sales process, how to create a story, how to make the thing work. And it's very, very simple. It's very straightforward. And so there's a home study course. Twice a year, we offer a chance to get into some actual mentoring classes where I have professional writers help me teach a number of classes, and we put students in there so they're actually holding their hand for about 2 months as the students go through each of the steps. So there's two ways to access this. If when people hear this, the actual classes aren't going on, and again, it only happens twice a year, so if you miss it, you know.
I'll keep my readers up to date, but I'm doing the course too, so
okay.
I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, it's great. It's life changing. I mean, the best thing that, as you know, the best thing that happens as a teacher is when the lights go off in the student's head, and that's why these testimonials I get are just really precious to me. These people, literally, every time I go to a seminar, even over here in Australia, people come up to me with literally tears in their eyes. You know, it's like the doors have opened and now things have happened. So you just have to remember, the tech is important and you need that. And all the whiz-bang stuff, you know, the branding and knowing how to be a CEO and time manager, all that's important and you need that. But you need to know how to sell. You need to know how to do that. A really shitty website with the worst technology and the worst everything that knows how to sell is going to just demolish the most high-tech whiz-bang thing you can that doesn't know how to sell. So knowing how to sell is where it begins.
Great. So just as a wrap-up, I know you do hot seats and you like the spontaneity of that and
yeah.
You've got a fast mind. Can I give you a little challenge?
Okay. As long as you can edit. So.
Well, I'm gonna podcast this from my blog and I'd love to know what sort of headline I should use for the blog post. Would it be something like,
do you have it up?
John Carlton cries, he makes people cry, or something like that. Like, what would grab some eyeballs that we could...
Well, does your list probably doesn't know who I am necessarily, right? So I'm a,
probably some of them are, yeah, but they really will want to.
I don't remember how many things we talked about, but if you go back through and number them, it's good to codify things.
Yep.
So I think we might have talked about 6 things. It might have been 8 things. So
yep.
8 dirty little secrets of selling online. That's all rookies. That are hidden from all rookies, but all the top guys use every day.
Right. And I like that because I like to say, right, we've got this information. Now, how do I process it and use it? And that's why having the how to use it is the importance. So that's what I do. I'd go back through the interview, I'd listen to it, note down the key points,
right.
And then I'd rephrase it back to my audience. Is that right?
Yes.
Great. Well,
exactly.
I suppose people listening to this have discovered what I picked. Thank you so much for your time.
That was great.
It's been a real pleasure touring Australia with you. And, I know a lot of people listening to this probably insanely jealous.
It's been fun. It's been one of the highlights was getting to know you and going over your house, meeting your family. That was really, fun. And you are definitely one of the leaders and, you're reforming the way a lot of us are thinking about doing things. And I'm always happy to see the new energy coming in and especially since you do have some salesman shops, you immediately understand things that I've had to literally drill into other people's heads. So,
well, my goal now is to spread that message. You know, go and find the best and get it back into the hands of the next generation. And
right.
A lot of people reading my information are new to the industry. And it's a pleasure to be able to share that. And, I welcome people to make comments underneath this post. Thanks, John.
Bye-bye.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.